Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we are going to be just absolutely tripping back in history, but we're going to be going back in history with a man who actually lived it. And he's 86 years young. His name is Glenn G. Boyer. He is a world-renowned author. He's a Pulitzer Prize nominee, and he is a Wyatt Earp novelist historian. This is a man that has led an absolutely fascinating life. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's so delightful to have you. Before we went on air, I was telling you I had been reading a story about a man who was in his 80s like yourself, and he could lift 80 pounds of bricks with his teeth. You said you were glad it wasn't you. You know,
that's
just
what you said. Better him than me.
Yeah, right. Now, Glenn, this story, Where the Heart Was, is about you, your family history. But let's go back a little bit. Talk about how you got interested in becoming a writer, because we have so many listeners who would love to be a writer. That is a passion that just sort of is within them, and they're sort of scared. How did you find out that this was something you wanted to do, and why did you decide to go into writing about Westerns especially?
All righty. I would say I was probably born to be a writer. Most of them are real professionals. They're driven to it. When I was in the Civilian Conservation Corps just before World War II,
mm-hmm.
an education advisor who was a very well-educated man, but in those days it was hard for people like that to find a job, so the government employed him in that position, and he told me when he saw the work I was doing on the CCC camp newspaper at Madison, Wisconsin, if you develop a style, you're going to become a writer. And as evidenced by what I became as a writer, I developed several styles, as a matter of fact. And so I was destined to be a writer, thinking I was born to write this book. I thought, if you wanted me to expand a little bit on this, the why of writing this book.
Yes, go ahead.
I thought we were getting soft after World War II. The champ hung up his gloves, and that's not my style. In place of the land of the spree and home of the brave, it seemed to me that we were the land of the spree and the home of the brave. And I'm not built right to put up with something like that, and my writing inevitably turned in that direction.
Yes, it does. Now, something that people need to know about you, that you served in the United States Air Force for 22 years. You retired as a lieutenant colonel and a command pilot. And since retirement, especially, you've devoted yourself to research and writing. And again, I'll mention you've written about Wyatt Earp. You've done also Custer, Terry, and Me. And your wife, who is Jane Coleman, she also has been a Pulitzer Prize nominee, and she's been nominated 5 times. And she's also a Western Heritage Award-winning author. The two of you, were you like magnets that just couldn't help but come to meet each other, since you're both avid writers about Western history and lore?
Yes, I think we were both born away from home and discovered that we had to live in the West, and that's where we met. I was giving a writer's conference at Silver City, New Mexico, And she was running a writer's program back at Carlo College in Pittsburgh when we met. And it's rather funny, as a matter of fact, I asked these people to submit something for me to read. And I was reading her submission and walking across the ranch house yard and walked into a bush. We've since referred to it as the burning bush. Anyhow, that's how we met. I went in and we met at dinner, and she said, she took one look at me and said, "This man will never hurt you." And she said the floor rocked up and down a little bit under her. Talk about love at first sight. And she says that's what it was. And I think the same thing. I took one look at her great big brown eyes and drowned in them. And we were in love.
Amazing. Now, how old were you when that happened?
How old was what?
How old were you when the two of you got married?
Oh, okay. We first met in 1983, and I'd have been 59.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I robbed the cradle. She's 15 years younger than I am.
Aha, you're giving away secrets. There we go. Now, I wanted to read to my listeners something that's right in the very first part of your book. And there is the one word, why.
Okay.
And you say, this story reinvokes the soul of the Republic. A voice spoke in the night and said, write the biography of the Republic. Carve it in autobiographical vignettes, deeply etched cameos that picture the lives of one pioneer American family. Cameos warm to the touch, strange and fascinating, like heirlooms discovered in a forgotten trunk. Recall the lives of sacred ancestors. Recall our debts owed to them. Owed to the Republic of Mankind, too, the human race. Listen by the waters. Freedom is something
very
that, well, thank you. Freedom is something that has to be earned. It is never packaged with a nice, pretty ribbon. And usually there's a lot of pain and suffering that goes along with its acquisition, because there are all too many that do not want freedom to reign, period. And this book of yours has so much historical information in it. And again, we have listeners that are writers. When you start your research, how do you begin? Where do you begin? Do you have basically an outline in your head? Are the characters real to you? I mean, Benny, where did Benny come from? Is he based on you?
Characters write a novel, actually, and you just let them run. The thing is, you've got to know your characters, and of course, in this case, I knew my characters very well because they were mostly my family or well-developed historical people, such as Washington and Lincoln and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So I didn't have any trouble there. I would say that poets say that they get a given poem. It just flows, and I had a muse, and you just read what my muse said to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when the muse turns you on, you just start writing. And I think maybe in view of the fact that I started as one thing, to be lecturing about the land of the spree, and ended up actually with something I intended to be inspiring, that the muse was involved there very much. And later on, with my chapter headings, which are semi-poetical at least, you said, listen by the waters. And I use that as a chapter heading that I'd like to read myself to the listeners.
Please do.
All righty. In the first place, with regard to listening by the waters, you might think I sound like a mystic, and perhaps I am. But if you listen by the waters, what they say basically is, I've been to the sea and back a million times, and I have learned much. Listen. And they'll tell you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Listen by the waters. This is chapter 2. And it's about Waubonsee, which actually is Aurora, Illinois. And I lived there during the Depression, having left our farm up north in Wisconsin. And we always referred to up north, it was as though it were Grail, because we were starving to death down there. during the Depression and longed to go back to the farm in the North,
mm-hmm.
which, as you realize, having read the book, we eventually managed to do. But this is Waubonsie, and it expresses some of the bad moments of the Depression. I remember you, Waubonsie, river town, Indian named, place of summer waters flowing, place of rustling green leaves. I remember your stark winters, bare branches etched against snow-deep hills, time of coughing and runny noses, of swift reluctant sallies outside, where even nuthatches hide from biting winds. Waubonsie, Indian named, river town, listen by the waters for rippling alien tongue of dispossessed race, rising like faint scent of coal trail. Lift your head and don't breathe. Hear the musical words. Softly. Waubon, lost one. Remember me. I am earth. Listen. I give wisdom. Waubonsie. And that's it. I have several of those introductions to chapters that, you know, I guess you'd call them semi-poetical anyway.
Well, I think poetry speaks to the heart and to the spirit. Now, when we're talking about the Depression, we're talking about the period in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many things that went on, that went on simultaneously. And it was very hard. And I'm so grateful for people like you that are recalling the story. Sometimes people will say, in fact, I was listening to a commentary before I came in my office to do a show, and they were saying, historically in schools, we're not teaching things about history anymore. It's as if the teachers of history, they're not allowed to exist. But there is a reality. When you can learn about what's gone before, hopefully you can be in a position to think and be aware about what you can do to prevent something so horrific from happening again. When I look at the photos of people during the Depression, they don't look any different than the photos of the people that were in Ethiopia. They just were wearing different clothes. That's all. In the 1980s, these horrific amounts of people in Ethiopia starving to death. And we had millions of people starving to death in the United States. And it's important for people to know this history. And that's why I think your book, Where the Heart Was, is so valuable. Because you are telling the story about your family's history. And you are telling the stories about experiences that you knew about, that people have told you about. You have woven them together very carefully with a tapestry result that makes a person pause and makes them think. And I really feel that this is something that we don't do enough of. And I think your book would be wonderful in a book club just for people to talk about, you know, going
here.
talking yeah. about the way, I mean, yeah, your mother, you know, how she had to take for your dad.
Honest.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to be rich but honest.
Rich and honest. Hey, that's a good combination. Now, there is this part. You talk about the old homestead. You talk about how harsh it was. Now, Benny is you. Benny is you. You talk about hunting. You talk about living in the wilds, what it was like, how people had to survive. And your mom, what she had to do. Give us a little bit of background on your family. How did your mom and dad get together?
Well, I think that they're fairly representative of America at that time, the poor people.
Mm-hmm.
And we sure went through a bad time of it. I know that, and I certainly agree with, incidentally, with what you say about teaching history in the school. I hope that learning about this more in detail will lead back to teaching history in the schools, and most historians agree. But we had a tough time of it. We started out up on the farm up north, as we called it, and my mother referred to it always as the end of the earth, and I don't blame her. She delivered me and also my older brother without the aid of a doctor. My grandmother was there, and that's all the help she had. And I must say that I certainly sympathize with women for the business of childbearing, and I can recognize why she more or less drove us from up on that subsistence farm into a dismal industrial town that was a suburb of Chicago. Of course, I'm talking about rural Illinois, or River,
mm-hmm.
as I called it. And I certainly hope that the pendulum is swinging, and I see signs of it, in favor of teaching history in the schools. As philosopher George Santayana said, those who cannot remember history are condemned to repeat it. And that's certainly true. And if we had remembered history, we might not be in the economic morass we're in today. There's something to think about. The lessons were all there. They're exactly the same. The causes were exactly the same. We could avoid it. But we tend to excuse that sort of thing by saying it's human nature. Well, that's tough. That identified the problem. Mm-hmm. Avarice is human nature, and it's going to get us before the fried potato or the atomic bomb. We're going to have to change human nature, and nothing but education will do that.
You talk about one of your relatives having a restaurant, and the food was not so good. But
having what?
Having a restaurant.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And
my Aunt Mary.
Your Aunt Mary. She was quite a character.
Pardon?
She was quite a character.
Oh, indeed. Somebody, one of my other relatives, a niece, sent me a photograph of her just today with two of her sisters trying to be 1921 cheesecake, posing with their skirts pulled up where you can see their legs almost to their knees.
Woo!
Yeah.
And in that time, that was really being risque.
Yeah, we were just about to embark on the flapper age, but we hadn't quite done it yet.
You make a comment about books. Obviously, being a writer, you have a passion for them. Benny discovered a library, and that opened up his world. He said, the past lived only dimly in books compared to how true and bright it was in the heart of humans. And that Benny, your character, understood that without knowing that he did, this was how people could prevent the torrent of time from overwhelming them by not forgetting. And that's just dovetailing what you have just mentioned. You talk about the way women had to cook, and you talk about, you know, these little stoves. Yes.
In a hot kitchen, often with a wood-fired stove, and hot as blazes in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible ordeal.
I know. I have a friend who can recall being out on a farm, and during the summer, because that's when they had to do the canning, they had to prepare food for winter, otherwise they wouldn't have enough food to eat. She said, we put the fire outside because there was nowhere for air to circulate in the house. They would set a fire up outside and have big pots, and all the neighbors would come in together. She said, we all worked together as a team, and we had huge pots that were boiling and sterilizing jars and things like this so that we could put our food up for the winter. We just don't realize how recent that really was. That wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't.
When you think about technology and how it's evolved, I mean, my own grandmother in Virginia, they would not have food during winter if they didn't put up all of their vegetables and their meats and if they didn't salt their meats and all kinds of things we don't even consider. And I think the young people of today need to know about it. I remember it impressed me so much when I was growing up. And I grew up in California. We never had to worry about anything like that. But it runs deep in your psyche when you are aware of what families have gone through. And if you're not on a farm, you don't have the animals. You don't have the vegetables. You're a city person. You're dependent on the grocery stores. We're used to just popping in and out of 7-Elevens or our friendly grocer, and everything's up there on the shelf, and we really don't understand what it takes to get it there. So your book brings so much history to the forefront. You have a character, Johnny Todd. You have a chapter dedicated to him. Tell us about Johnny Todd.
He was definitely my blood grandfather. He was a professional gambler, among other things. But he wrote under the colors of an educator. As a matter of fact, he wrote a couple of books, one on history and one on geography.
Wow.
A system of teaching called the Brace System. But he made a lot of money gambling, and he probably, when we got back up north, kept us from going under several times by injecting money into the operation, because he went to Chicago and left his wife, my grandmother, and she went up north and took up this subsistence farm with my father to help her out. He was her oldest boy, and he was tired of an industrial situation in a town he was living in, and he wanted to get back to the country. He had been raised as a country boy. So they went back up there, and Johnny Todd used to come up every summer. And I wrote an article a few years ago, maybe 25 as a matter of fact, that one of our neighbors from up there read the article and happened to come through Bisbee, Arizona, where I was living at that time, and called me up and asked if he could come over and talk. And we talked, and get this, he said, you know, when your grandfather used to come up there, he was always getting a poker game started. And the funny thing about it was he never lost. And I thought, no kidding. There was a reason. Anyway, he was by way of having gone through the West as a young man. He knew Wild Bill Hickok, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
And
see, stories like that in families, I think that there's so much in your book, Where the Heart Was, that shares what your family experienced. And here you've got someone in your family that knew Wild Bill Hickok. These are little nuggets that are just wonderful to be able to pass along in the family and to be able to pass it down.
And that's how we talked about. Before we get off, could I read one more thing that I think is highly significant?
Certainly. Go right ahead.
This book's narrative arc, as they call it, of course, is a move from failure to triumph, and the triumph starts when we get back up north. And this is the title of Chapter 28, Up North Again. And it tells what kind of a place that was. I am still the buckskin land, tarry beside the waters that divide me. Sleep with me in starlight. Winnebago and Chippewa silently slip through my aisles, one with earth. Kill their brother, the deer. Speed bullet with prayer for the soul whose earthly shrine they steal. Bear and wolf, lynx, coyote, fox, walk my fastnesses. Drink my waters, hunt. Rabbits and mice, deer, each other. Survival rules and the need to eat. Hear my trees, musical in breezes, threatening in storms when birch and poplar roar. Listen, it is timber wolf. Only bear does not fear him. Why do you hold your breath? Both fear man. Do not hate my violence, fear my shadowed places. I am what you make of me, friend or foe. The Indian knows but is silent. I am an open book. Read me if you can. And, of course, when we got back up north, I learned to read him. It's in me. It's in my heart. It's a wonderful place. And, of course, that is where the heart was.
Mm-hmm. And you make a comment in your book. You say, you ask the question, what endures? The response is love and the land. And that came from Pro Bono Publico, being interviewed by Vox Populi. This is so true. The land throughout all of mankind's history has been that has enabled him to have sustenance. It has given him food. It has enabled wild creatures to roam that provide clothing, that provide all kinds of things for us. And today, in our world, we're realizing that we've not been too good as custodians because we have done a lot of destruction. Yet a lot of people are becoming aware that this land is something that we do need to take care of. Of course, we see disasters like Haiti, and that is brought home even more effectively and efficiently. Glenn, I know we're coming to the part where Benny, as a man, he grows up, he's in Pearl Harbor, he has experienced war, he has seen the worst side of humanity, and he has seen also the best side of humanity. And you go into that, the story of your life that you've put into Where the Heart Was, what would you want remembered by those that would read it? What is it that you really want to give as the gift to your readers?
I would like them to remember, despite the hardship, the overall romanticism that existed in these people, their love for each other, and their optimism in general. We all knew we were either going to be cowboys or firemen or something, even when we were practically starving to death, and realized that we could become president too, you know. And that's part of the American dream, I think. Also, you said something about hoping people would read for the sake of education, and that I went to the library and a new world opened up for me.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Carlyle, the British philosopher, said, "The only real education in any generation is a good library," implying that the choice is proper and that what you read is understood and you're able to act on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Yes. That is something that I think is so important. And, of course, in reading 400 to 600 books a year, as I do, it's amazing how your world expands. And I know most people aren't going to have a passion for it the way I do because they're not doing what I'm doing, interviewing people like you. But I'm so grateful that you have taken the time to write this book. Now, have you got a new one on the burner?
I'm working on a book on American history that precedes this one, and it's about a dynasty. And I think that we should bring in that part of American history in the same fashion,
mm-hmm.
but it induces the reader to go on and on because it's very interesting and informative and consists of exciting vignettes that we should know about. But it'll be a while.
It'll be a while. Well, Glenn, you'll have to send me a copy. Now, where can people find out more about you, your accomplishments? Do you have a website, Glenn?
It's not active right now. My publisher, who kept the website for me, was tragically killed in an automobile accident about 6 months ago.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Part of it fell into limbo. Yes, she was an absolute doll. God bless her.
Wow. Well, let's hope you get it up. Do you have a website address where people could go and check out what you do have?
Not at the moment.
All right.
Definitely.
All right. Well, I do know that this
Never
is...
Never get the book. I'd like them to go to their local bookstores and get it in the bookstores.
Okay.
If we're going to get it around, word of mouth will do it.
Absolutely. Where the Heart Was. By the way, this book is dedicated to Abraham Lincoln. And this is a novel, but it is mesmerizing. It is portraying what was a part of American history. And before we close out, the very last page in his book is May 1861. And this is a quote from that time frame. "Hear the drums, the drums, the drums of the Republic marching. Where are the drums of the Republic? The drums of the Republic are returning from behind the hills of history, as they always had when the need truly arose, so that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from this earth." Glenn Boyer, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
It has been a delight.
I'd like to wish God bless to everybody before I go off.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. And keep up your writing. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Where the Heart Was, go to your local bookstore. Glenn G. Boyer, a man who has lived the history that he has written about. It is really phenomenal. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Northwest Women's Show, presented by Assurant Health, is a show that's all about you, your body, your spirit, your life. 400 exhibits, free samples, and best of all, shopping with fabulous women's show specials. Meet Amy Roloff from Little People Big World and cosmetic cop Paula Begon. Bring your questions to Hollywood celebrity stylist and creator of Wynn Hair Care Products, Chaz Dean. Make it a point to attend our free seminars and be inspired by topics that can change your life, like channeling your inner strength, weight loss strategies, and women's self-defense, plus fun and trendy fashion shows from JCPenney. And backed by popular demand, Seattle's hottest firefighters, favorite authors Ann Rule and J.A. Jantz, The Women's Show, presented by Assurant Health, March 5th through 7th at Quest Field Event Center, sponsored by Bartell Drugs, American Family Insurance, Puget Sound Energy, Snoqualmie Casino, The Seattle Times, and King 5. For show information, go to nwwomenshow.com. The Northwest Women's Show. It's such a girl thing.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines? Well, they're now open. That's right. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. The telephone number to call into is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. After that, I'll just tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything or anyone that you like. Well, countdown, one more day, and then it happens. What? The Northwest Women's Show. Tomorrow is it. I was in this morning. I was talking to my engineer, and I was saying I was in this morning early, and I drove into Seattle, and I got my booth all set up, and then turn around and come back. It's just go, 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 go. But you know when you're in an event like this, and you go in and you're setting all your stuff up and you're doing all of the work and preparation, and then you go back the next day. It's like someone has waved a magic wand and just said, ta-da! It's just absolutely awesome. So if you're in the Seattle area, hey, you've got to come on out to the women's show. And that is at the Quest Convention Center. Over 40,000 women attend this event every year. Our weather is glorious here in the Pacific Northwest. The sun is shining and the blue skies are really there in Seattle. And it's going to be a three-day event. I'm in booth 407. Now, tomorrow I am going to be hosting a six-woman forum. This is fabulous. For the first hour, it's going to be about money. We're going to be talking about identity fraud. We're going to be talking about working with money. The second hour is going to be about healing. That's right, energy healing. I've got two dynamic women that work in different modalities of it, so we're going to be discussing that. Then the third hour is going to be about animals. Two powerful women that are going to be talking about animals and wellness and what we can do and so on and so forth. It's just wonderful to be able to do this. And I'll be able to talk to you if you want a mini consultation before 1 o'clock and also after 4 o'clock. I'll be available for that. And then Saturday and Sunday, I'll be speaking at 11:30 on your inner psychic mirror. And that is going to be the talk. It'll be at 11:30. Now on Friday, I'm going to be at the Girls Talk stage. That's where the forum of speakers is going to be. On Saturday and Sunday, I'll be at the seminar stage doing the talking. So I'll be in booth 407, though, before and after each of the speaking events to do many consultations. And I have a wonderful arrangement of books that's going to be there. And so if you're a reader, if you want recipe books, if you want whatever, I mean, it's just absolutely awesome. We're going to have all kinds of things there, and we look forward to seeing you. And I've got some wonderful people that are volunteering to work with me at the show. So come on out. It's at the Quest Convention Center. Check northwestwomenshow.com, NWWomensShow.com, and you'll get all of the details that you need. Also, I want to make a comment. If you have a story about the paranormal, I want you to send it to me, if you will. I am compiling 100 stories, and I just love the ones that have been sent. I mean, these are just awesome personal experiences that people have had. I would love for me to send. I'd love for you to send to me your story. You can do it via email, and if you want to send it via email, be sure and put in the subject line that it's, you know, the Donna Sebo Show, or this is Donna's book, or something like this. Anything that will draw my eye to the subject matter, because that's very important. Do that and send me your story. Be sure to put your contact information in there, because we are going to need it. And just send it along to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna, D-O-N-N-A, at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, international.com. Or you can, if you wanted to, type it out and send it to me. Send it to the Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. As I'd love to hear from you. I'm just so excited about the stories, though, that have been coming in. Ooh, this is a great project. I'm so glad I've started it. Now, I know every gal that is doing spring cleaning just gets ecstatic over it, right? Wrong. If they're like me, they go, good grief, how did spring get here so fast? And it's really the time that you want to start tidying things up. The weather is warming up. In our neck of the woods, it's warmed up. I don't know about yours. And, you know, this really was a tradition that started way back in Victorian times. And actually, I think it was way, way, way before that. But in Victorian times, people in Europe had kept their houses so tightly closed up. And, of course, they had to deal with bed bugs and all kinds of things that, fortunately, we don't have to deal with too much today at the level that they had, because keeping things clean then was really tough work. It was really, really hard. They didn't have any of the conveniences like we've got today. And it was something you had to open up the windows, and if you lived in a damp area of country, you had to deal with mold and all kinds of stuff, which we still have to deal with today, believe it or not. But at least we have heating systems inside our homes, which they did not. They only had their fireplaces at that time, or particular kinds of stoves. So you'd clean things out, and it was really a chore. It was really a lot of work. And it still is work. But I've got some tips here that maybe will help you. If you're like me, you never remember what to do on top of the fridge, and I know we've got a caller, but I'm just going to run through these things real quickly. I got a tip on what to do for the top of the fridge, because if you're like me, I'm short. So the likelihood of my getting up on a ladder and cleaning off the top of the fridge every week is just not going to happen. I just don't do it very often. Well, if you take a microfiber cloth to the bristles of a broom with a rubber band and run it across the top of the fridge, that'll help you to clean it. But also, put a piece of wax paper on top of the fridge to capture any new dust. And then all you have to do is change the wax paper. Now, how easy is that? That is so good. I know the stuff up on the top of the fridge, always have to wash it, you know, once or twice a year, because it gets the film from the cooking that you have going on. It's one of those things that just comes with housekeeping. Yuck. Let's move on. Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Initial D from Everett.
From Everett. Welcome. That's
Thank
Everett,
you.
Washington, I'm assuming.
Yes.
All right, dear. Now, when you speak, you are going to have to speak up because your voice is very, very soft. Well, maybe you're going to be able to come to the women's show.
Yeah, I'm planning to.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, stop by my booth when you do. I'm in booth 407. Okay, let's get down to you, Dee. The first thing I'm looking at is a phone call, and I'm seeing you saying, this is disappointing. I would have hoped that I could have had a different result. Don't worry about it, because if you get stuck with being concerned about the disappointment of the phone call, and I don't have any idea what this is relating to, but the disappointment of the phone call should not be something that is that big a deal. If you want, just go take a walk around the block or do something to just make it okay that you have the disappointment, and then move on from it. Don't wallow in the disappointment. Don't let it weigh your mind down, because if you allow it to do that to you, then perhaps you're not going to be putting out your best for another opportunity. But there are some small setbacks that seem to be occurring in your life, but they're really small. They're nothing that you should worry about. I think you're a natural-born worry wart. And your life basically is in good balance. Your life is not out of balance. So just be patient, because that is what's going to reward you. And also do sign up for a class that is going to be coming up within, I say, it's either the next 3 to 4 weeks or the next 3 to 4 months. It's within a very short period of time anyway. And it's something that you may think is, gee, a little frivolous. Do it anyway. Don't worry about it. I think whatever this is going to be enough of an interest to you that it's going to make a difference in your life. What would you like to ask me about?
You mentioned a phone call. That's a phone call that's going to be happening very soon?
Yes. It looks to me like it's within the near future.
And it's a disappointing phone call.
Yes, it's a disappointing phone call to you. You know, I'm wondering, because when I'm looking at the imagery of this, I am wondering if you are going to relate it to something of the past. And I think that's where the disappointment is linked to. So this, whatever will occur, it will bring back a memory from the past. And all I want to say to you is don't waste your time on this too long. Keep on going.
Okay.
Now, do you have a question for me today?
What do you see for me as far as jobs?
I'm seeing stability with you as far as work goes. I'm not seeing you unemployed. Is there a reason why you're concerned about a job?
I'm not concerned. I was just wondering if you see any changes.
No, like not right now. Not right now.
Okay.
Not right now. Perhaps in about 6 months.
Wow, it's going to be that long.
Oh, easily. That's
six.
Not long.
six
That's
months.
Not long.
Six
Remember
months.
What I said about patience.
Yes.
Remember what I said about patience, because everything seems to be very solid around you. So don't worry about it.
Okay, great. Do you see me moving anywhere? Because I'm
going to have to limit it to one question. So,
oh, okay.
All right. All right. Uh-huh. And I've got to go on break.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And do stop by and say hello when you come out to the women's show.
I will. All right. And you do take a mini reading session, or I can have a reading with you.
Yes. If you come out tomorrow, I'm not going to have as much time for that. The show opens at 10, and I will be available up until about 12:45. And then from 10 to 12:45, I'll be available for mini sessions. And then I'll be doing the 6-speaker forum. I've got the 6 women that are going to be there. And then after that, after 4 o'clock, then I'll be available.
How about Saturday?
Saturday, I will be available the entire day except for 1 half hour from 11:30 to noon.
Okay.
And then
I may stop by on Saturday then.
Oh, fabulous. I've got to go, hon. See you there.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Donna Sebo, and I'll be talking to you again. If you want to chat with me, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo, and before I go to my caller who's been waiting so very patiently, and I want to thank you for doing that, I want to let you know who's coming on next week. We're going to be talking about Chasing Normal by Dinah Federer. Now, this is a powerful, powerful story because it deals with someone having disability and how they go about making their life a rich experience. And it's a wonderful inspiration to anyone. And then we're going to be talking about the new Common Sense Guide to Your 401k. Now, if you're shaking your head saying, no, not in today's world, well, I think you're going to find Mary Rowland a fascinating woman. We're talking about money on Tuesday, the Healing Touch Guidebook. Dorothea Kramer, who's going to be one of my speakers at the Northwest Women's Show tomorrow, well, she's got this Healing Touch Guidebook, and if you're not able to be in the Pacific Northwest to hear her in person, that's all right. We're going to be talking with her on air next week. 5 Strategies for Staying Employed in Today's Economy. Nina Price is going to be my guest, and then on the 12th, we have an open mic day. So a week from tomorrow, it'll be an open mic day, so the phone lines will be open for the entire hour. Let's go to our caller who's been waiting so patiently. This is Donna. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Helen, calling from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, Helen. Now, in Phoenix, I know the sun is shining, and you are dealing with some irritated individuals. I don't know what's going on here, but it seems as if you inadvertently, if you're not prudent, are going to be stepping into what I call a hornet's nest. So I don't know if you are considering volunteering for a particular job, if maybe someone's tried to recruit you to become a part of their team. I want to say be on guard, be alert. that there may be what I call some catty individuals. And if you find that's the case, you may want to step away from it. If you choose to stay involved with these people, because this looks like something temporary. This doesn't look like something that's going to be for the next 3 or 4 years of your life. But you'll need to make a choice about whether you want to spend some time with these people, or after being aware of certain individuals, you may decide that you don't want to make this into anything that's going to be long-term, and that would be prudent. This is really strange. I don't see you seeking out this kind of thing. And I just feel as if whoever is organizing whatever this group may be is not being very selective as far as the quality of temperament and integrity on the part of the people that are participating in this. So keep your eyes and ears open. Again, this isn't something I'm seeing you associated with long-term, for good reason, but I also think that you are sort of making a determination that you're going to put your life into a different working pattern. And I think that this is smart, because you're saying, I want to step away from certain tendencies that I've had, that I keep repeating, and I want to be mindfully present about what I really, really want to be a part of. So you're making some very good choices, and you just need to pay attention. That's all. You need to look, not assume. You need to get your facts, and you're going to be just fine. You're going to be just fine. What would you like to ask me today?
Well, you picked up exactly where I was at the last several hours. I was at a meeting, and it's something that's grassroots and taking off, and different entities are coming together, and so what you're saying, I guess I'm not too surprised, I suppose.
Well, keep your eyes and ears open. You really need to watch, look, and listen. And I think you're going to find this grassroots group, as you are describing it, is really going to go through some severe changes, real severe changes, and as soon as the next 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
And be prepared. There's a couple of people that are vying for the front position. And they feel like they're entitled to it. They really aren't, but that's their attitude. So you just need to watch, look, and listen. I don't think this is bad. I think that this is something you need to have a more realistic understanding of the way the politics works.
Okay.
And sometimes it's good in a group to have someone that'll stand up and say, excuse me, what's the agenda? I understand, I want to be clear on this. Is this an agenda? Is it X, Y, Z? And if they say, oh, yeah, I'll say, all right, then why are you going to, instead of X, Y, Z, you're going to G, Q, and B? What does that have to do with X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And that's okay. Your intelligence is just as good as theirs, but they don't think that anybody's paying attention.
Okay.
And that makes a difference.
Well,
and
thank you
for calling in, Helen.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. Now, we have enough time. Yesterday, I said I was going to give you a pizza recipe. And I say a pizza recipe because that's really what it is. It's for smoked salmon wedges. Now, this really is so easy. Let me give it to you quickly, because I know we're running out of time and I wasn't able to do it yesterday. Now, all you have to do is get a 12-inch thin crust prepared pizza deal. And that's easy enough. Your local store has it. You're going to need 1/4 cup of sour cream, 2 tablespoons plus 2 teaspoons of finely chopped red onion. Now, if you don't have red, use white, use whatever you've got. Even the white of scallions would be fine. 2 tablespoons of minced fresh dill. That makes a difference in taste. And you need 5 ounces of smoked salmon, very thinly sliced, and 3 teaspoons of drained capers. Now, this is how simple it is. You preheat your oven to 325 degrees, and you position your oven rack in the center of the oven. You put your crust directly on the rack and warm it for 5 minutes. Then you transfer the warm crust to your cutting board. And you then spread your sour cream over the crust leaving about a half-inch border, and then sprinkle about half the red onion over the sour cream and sprinkle half of the dill over the onion. Then you lay your salmon slices over the pizza to cover the sour cream, the onion, and the dill, and then you sprinkle your remaining onion and dill over the salmon and scatter your capers over them. And it serves, you know, it's 12 servings there, so you could have maybe 6 to 8 servings, but if you're like most of it's going to go for 4 people in general. What I would say to you is if you're a person that loves your cheese, now if you noticed, obviously, there was no cheese with this, then choose a cheese that's going to complement, because salmon is a delicate flavor. And that's why you cook the crust first, and then you put the ingredients on. But if you should decide you'd like to have a special cheese on there, think about how it's going to go with the salmon and put it on the crust so that that is already cooking with the crust, and it'll be nice and golden brown and the salmon over the top of it. Really, really good. Now, I know with me, I like onions that are cooked, so I pre-cook the onions first. This is Donna Sebo. We are out of time. Goodness, it went by like the wind. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And as Annie Roberts said, we're all lighthouses shining out across 1,000 tomorrows. We are all beacons of hope, drawing strength from one another. Tomorrow, the best of Donna. Monday, back live in studio, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.